our conversation continues on vouchers as the legislature prepares to take up the issue in the month of January. As we visit with White County Director of Schools Kurt Dronebarger, Putnam County Director of Schools Corby King, and Grant Swallows, Director of the Warren County School System.
This conversation is not about the reading score thing, but I do feel like it's an important discussion to have because it sets the tone for where we are in the state right now. It would seem that we could all agree that, okay, we have a problem with reading in the state of Tennessee. And so let's say that we're going to start a program that for all four-year-olds beginning next year, that they're going to get a series of books and they all have to read those books before they go into school. Would that not make more sense than just, you know, something comprehensive like that than saying third grade, it's a test score?
I think, you know, we will say there has been more focus,
yes,
and more training that has gone on for teachers and all that. There have been things that come along with that. That doesn't typically get the conversation started,
sure,
because there is such a high stakes with third grade and retaining. Ultimately, I would, again, speak for my district. We had more third graders that were proficient last year, not probably because of that suddenly we just got better at teaching it. It was some motivation. And again, back to the support that Kurt talked about at the very beginning, families got involved. And I think that's what led to that. And I think if we, to your point, if we're going to be able to support and put things in place to help support the reading issue that we have, then we will continue to see things get better.
And the state has, you know, invested a tremendous amount of resources in the last few years in reading initiatives. And we are becoming more focused and changing how we teach reading, the instructional from the foundation, pre-K, kindergarten, first, second grade. We're all spending a lot more money. You see the curriculum adoptions. It's a lot more money for materials and the high-quality instructional materials that are much more challenging, much more rigorous than what we used in the past. And, yes, those are, I think, those are valuable investments. And it's those are appreciated. But let's let them work. Let's give us time to get our students up to that level and let our teachers and invest our time there.
And, Kurt, you're setting up a relationship where you failed my child. My child can't go on to the fourth grade because you didn't do your job to teach him or her reading when, again, we have very clear scientific evidence that the ability to read happens as much at home as it does in a school.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what we spoke of earlier. And, you know, we see that. And we, as Grant spoke earlier, we want that relationship with parents. You know, we value that when they partner with us and don't have that those two separate worlds. We always want to bring those worlds together. It's something we all fight for in our respective communities. And so that's just the key, is that we have that partnership between the parents and the schools to make that as good as it can be. And that's what's frustrating, I think, from at least my standpoint with this voucher idea, is that the schools aren't doing that, that they're not trying to do that, and that parents are going to have to go somewhere else to find that type of relationship. It's just not true. And we also have statistics to show that that doesn't work. There, you can't name a state where this has been successful. Everywhere where they've done a widespread voucher program, they've failed time and time again. Statistics show that those students, a majority of those students, do worse on standardized testing than their public school counterparts.
But it's a one-sided holding accountable. The legislature is not holding parents accountable for the role that they play.
Yeah, and I give them credit. With the third grade retention law, they did try to do that somewhat. So and to Grant's point, we did see some parents step up and say, okay, we need to get serious about this. You know, but I look at my own family. You know, I had some students, my own children, that I didn't have to do a whole lot with them. They were self-motivated. They were self-starters. They worked hard. I didn't do a lot of homework. I have a daughter that I have to work with her quite a bit. You know, she's a smart little girl, but she struggles in some areas, and we have to work quite a bit. But I think there are times where I'm sitting there, my wife's sitting there, and we have all these college degrees, and we're doing all this work to work. That doesn't happen in every community. Sure. And like I said, there's more important needs of just on daily life sometimes in some of our households that they don't have the time and the resources to do that. But at the same time, we're accountable at the public school. We don't shy away from that. But we want to make sure, I want to make sure that regardless of where this voucher thing goes, is that the same accountability system is applied to both sets. If they play by the same rules, I have no problem with a voucher system in any direction they want to go. But we got to play by the same rules.
Corby King is Putnam County's Director of Schools. Grant Swallows directs the Warren County School System. Kurt Dronbarger leads the White County School System. Our focus is on vouchers. When we come back, we'll talk about the mechanics of this. Our conversation continues with Corby King, Grant Swallows, Kurt Dronbarger, leaders of Putnam, Warren, and White County school systems, respectively. On one level, the average person might say, okay, if Corby wants to take the tax money that's allocated to his children and use that in a private school, what's the big deal? And maybe at one level, that makes some sense. It does not make sense from the standpoint of the way schools are funded. And that really gets to the heart of the issue. Can we discuss, starting with you, Kurt, just a base level of how are schools funded by the state? It revolves around the number of pupils.
It does. There was an overwhelming overhaul of school funding last year. We've moved to TESA funding, as they call it now. And it's based on the student and the student's needs. So as there's a base amount, and then there are extra funding available for the specific needs that that student may have. And then there's also funding, what they call outcomes. So based on how the students perform on testing, there's some extra money there available as well. So there was more money given to public schools this year, more than ever before. There are some disproportionate issues with the size. Some of our very small districts didn't see the influx that they needed to be successful, but there was more money provided. But what I like to say is that even though there was a huge influx of money that came into the school as a state, I think a lot of school systems, I'll speak for White County, we got our head above water. I can't say that we are now just able to do all the things that we need to do. I think we were lagging in our teacher salaries. We were lagging in our infrastructure and what we could do with our buildings. And so it got us to a point where maybe our head is a little bit above water, but it certainly hasn't gotten us where we need to be. My concern about using funding then to say, okay, we've invested all this into public education, but now I want to take my money and go to maybe a private school and take my money there. I worry about where that stops. You know, I think about the roads. Do I get my road money? Can I just take my road money and Corby takes his and Grant takes his? And I don't like the way they're doing the roads out here, so I'm just going to pave this spot right in front of my house. Well, then what does our road system look like when everybody kind of takes their money and runs? And, you know, I just use that as one kind of flippant example. But, that's a concern I have is when we just start saying, okay, we've provided a good quality education in the public schools, and now we're going to let people piecemeal and decide where they want to go.
But if you're looking at it from a per student, which is how the part of the TESA formula is funded, that we're going to give you this much money per student, Corby, it seems to me as a business person that we don't fund the things that schools do in that same way. So in other words, we don't fund a counselor based on 45 students that you're going to serve. And so that's why it breaks down this idea of you could take your money and...
And that's part of the overhaul in the funding formula. Before when we had the BEP, it was based on ratios. It was, you need so many teachers. You know, if you got X number of students, you need this many teachers. If you've got this many students, you need this many counselors, this many nurses, this many specials, teachers, whatever it may be. Now we're saying this student generates X amount. And part of that overhaul, again, you go back to the conspiracy theorists, was to drive this towards the vouchers, because now we can show, well, how much money we're spending per student. Our funding's always been based on our student enrollment. But now it's, well, this is how much that student generates to come up with whatever this dollar amount is. So it's easier to take that student's money and send it somewhere else, looking at the vouchers. I think in the school system, there's still so many needs that we all have. If you look in terms of maintenance and facilities costs, you look in terms of getting teacher salaries to $50,000 minimum, which we're all pushing to do, it's still several years away, improving the number of counselors. You know, we're all way understaffed when you look at school counselors, school psychologists, school nurses, at the number of maintenance personnel that we have, we're way understaffed. So I think until we fully fund those areas and provide those needs, it doesn't make sense to then start taking that money out and sending it just so you can take care of special projects over here.
So even with TESA, Grant, are we really funded in a way that if we take 10 students out, we can still fund the custodian and the school lunch director and those other positions like that?
Yeah, so it's a great question. It's not necessarily that you can do that, because so let's just use that example. 10 students take their $6,860. That's the TESA funding. You're looking at you know, roughly $70,000. But 10 students leave, that's still, we still have teachers that need to teach in a classroom, even if 10 students leave. You take 70 some odd thousand dollars, we still have to fund a teacher.
Because if that one, if one of those 10 students was a third grader, we've only reduced the third grade class from 20 to 19.
Right. That's correct. That's correct. So we still have those funding needs, but yet we've lost the funding through the student. And so that's what I think what Corby was talking about, the individualized look at what TESA said. It all sounds good in theory, but for us, and again, I love that you said as a businessman, I think any businessman that comes in and looks at education funding would say, I don't know how you do this, because ultimately it's very complicated and very something that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because we do still have those needs too.
So what is the state's answer when you bring up this, just let's stay with the, we lost one third grader and we lost that money, but you still have to fund those other 19 third graders.
So, I mean, I hear right now that, you know, from the top that, you know, we just gave $1 billion to public education, and there's not a big appetite to, you know, just to support that even more. That's what TESA was all about. But at the same time, you're hearing conversation about the, you know, the speaker talking about denying the use of federal funds, you know, turning down the federal funds and they're using state surplus money to supplant that money, which, you know, I have, that makes no sense to me as well. If you, first of all, I say, if you have that much money in surplus, then support the public schools now, like you should, and not take away money just to supplant it with others. And then also that's problematic because a lot of that federal money is Tennessee dollars. So you'd just be giving it away to other states and not bringing that back. So there's a lot of problems there. But that's what we hear right now, is that a lot of money, that's what I'm hearing, is that there's already been a lot of money given to public education. You go run with that and go and make that work.
We continue our discussion on vouchers. The governor has proposed a change that was a system that really was limited to the bigger municipalities. Now a chance to expand it all across the state. Corby King, Putnam County Director of Schools, have you modeled what it would look like if 100 students in Putnam County were to leave, and what would be the economic impact of something like that?
We haven't run those models yet. This is still fairly new, but we know that if 100 students leave, you multiply that by, you know, $7,000, and that's, you know, $700,000 or whatever. I was a social studies teacher, but right. You know, I'd have to have the calculator out for that. But you know, you lose $700,000. That's a big hit in our budget. So on the immediate side of that, what does that mean for us in Putnam County? Well, we have teachers who are going to retire, who leave. You don't replace those teachers. We might not have to build that new school as quickly as we were going to have to build the new school. But if 150, 200 students, at some point, there's a breaking point where you start losing programs. It's not just teachers that we lose. It's not just the school building that we lose. But then it becomes about the services we can provide.
What do you mean by programs? Give us an example.
It could be within after-school programming. It could be with tutoring. It could be with, I don't want to say athletics, but could you lose it? Could you lose an art, music teacher, encore type programs? It could be if you lose a certain number of students, because now you don't have the funding to fund the, you know, to pay for those programs, because our funding is based on that student population. The immediate impact would be the core classroom teachers that you would lose, but we still have to meet student teacher ratios. We don't want classrooms of 30 third graders, 30 fourth graders. We have to stay, you know, less than 20. So, or around 20 students per class. We're staffed pretty tight as it is. We don't want to increase class sizes any more than they already are. So you then look at the extra things that we do. Maybe we don't have money to, you know, extra money to put into, whether it's extracurricular athletics, band, whatever that may be. The more students you lose, the less money you have for those type programs.